Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. Travel has become more difficult, what with having to remove your shoes, put all your toiletries in tiny bottles, and not being able to bring your own water, for goodness sakes. There are more weights, more rules, and it's more expensive. If this weren't enough, there are exposures you can't control for to chemicals, radiation, viruses, and bacteria. And if this doesn't put you off, remember, you may end up stuck in an airplane for hours waiting for it to take off or land. These mostly airless compartments recirculating what air there is with perfumes, bugs, and chemicals. It's amazing, but people still travel. Truthfully, even if you travel in your own car or on a train, it's still important to have some easy first aid remedies with you to handle the common discomforts of being in a new place with new water, food, stresses, and the occasional illness or insect bite. Join us today as we look at some appropriate homeopathic remedies to bring with you, along with some other good sense suggestions for helping you when you're away from home. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Jeff Fawcett, PhD.
Thank you, Lena. After our show last week on lung health, we received a note from a listener about the relationship between estrogen and lung health that alerted us to an article by Dr. Jonathan Wright from his August 2008 newsletter. In it, he discusses the work of Donald Massaro and Gloria DiCarlo Massaro, researchers at the Lung Biology Laboratory at Georgetown University Medical School. For over a decade, these and other researchers at the Lung Biology Lab have been investigating the role of estrogen in maintaining lung health. More importantly, they've demonstrated that the decline of lung health can be repaired by estrogen therapy. You'll remember from last week that alveoli are the tiny sacs in your lungs where oxygen is exchanged for carbon dioxide. As just a matter of physics, lung function improves with smaller and more numerous alveoli. With a lung disease like emphysema, the size of alveoli increases and their numbers decrease in a vicious cycle of oxidative stress. It becomes increasingly difficult to get carbon dioxide out, oxygen in. In addition, the oxidative stress causes the matrix that holds the cells of the alveoli to stiffen, make the lungs less elastic, making breathing more difficult, and adding to the sufferer's stress. The chief oxidative stressors that start this process are tobacco smoke, smog, occupational air pollution, and socioeconomic inequality. One of the common things I found in the literature on this issue is the claim that this restructuring of the lungs is irreversible. According to the Massaros, in a review article published in the Proceedings of the American Thoracic Society, this is almost certainly not true. To date, they've only been able to demonstrate the regeneration of small, numerous alveoli in female mice. However, they argue that there are powerful reasons to believe that humans respond in the same way. The Massaros note that in humans, the decline of lung function starts in the 30s and 40s for both men and women. For men, the decline is about a 6% loss of capacity per decade. After menopause, a woman's lung capacity also declines at about the same rate. But before menopause, lung capacity declines at only 2% per decade for women. The difference? Estrogen. The Massaros cite a number of studies that show how women taking either estrogen alone or estrogen with progesterone together have better lung capacity than women who do not. Why would this be so? As Jonathan Wright points out in his article, a pregnant woman not only has to eat for two, she has to breathe for two. There's considerable evidence that estrogen in a healthy female improves the exchange of oxygen for carbon dioxide. For example, comparing male to female mice with similar lung volumes, the females have better respiration capacity. Why aren't we hearing about this? Why didn't I come across it in the research I did for last week's show? Even though everything I read echoed the claim that the regeneration of alveoli from lung disease is irreversible, I could not accept that claim. I believe too strongly that the body has an amazing capacity to heal itself, if it's given what it needs and what it's used to. On the other hand, what dominates the research literature and the pronouncements from official institutions on lung disease is another ideology, an ideology that views healing as something that practitioners do, not the body. I'm glad I was able to learn this lesson again. Bodies heal, sometimes, with the help from health practitioners. A transcript of this editorial is available at the blog on yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett's an environmental economist, writer, and health educator who produces this show with me and is director of the Sustainable Health Institute at sustainablehealthinstitute.org. Now to our show, Traveling with Homeopathy, and my guest, Judith Ryan. Judith, you know, I practiced your name before I said it. It's Reichenberg Ullman. She is an ND and LCSW and is a licensed naturopathic physician, board certified in homeopathic medicine. She is the co-author of 7 books on homeopathy, including the best-selling Ritalin Free Kids, Prozac Free, A Drug-Free Approach to Asperger's Syndrome and Autism, Whole Woman Homeopathy, Rage-Free Kids and Homeopathic Self-Care. Columnist for the Townsend Letter for Doctors for the past 18 years, Dr. Reichenberg Ullman has written hundreds of published articles on homeopathy. She's taught internationally and is past president of the International Foundation for Homeopathy. Dr. Reichenberg Ullman practices at the Northwest Center for Homeopathic Medicine in Edmonds, Washington, and I guess that you're near a train.
Yes, we're near a train and a ferry. I can see the ferry from my desk.
So do you prefer to be addressed as Judith or Dr. Reichenberg?
It doesn't really matter. Judith is fine.
Okay, thank you. Most of our listeners are familiar with homeopathy as a traditional remedy kind of based traditional medicine, but just in case, or as energy medicine, but just in case, if you would give us a very brief discussion about the science on which homeopathic remedies are based.
Sure, and a lot of people do get confused about herbs and other kinds of natural medicine. I was just talking with a prospective new patient on Sunday, and she said, well, I've been using homeopathy, and it was GABA that she was talking about.
Oh, dear.
So homeopathy, homeopathic medicines are those little white pellets, either in blue tubes or in a variety of different packaging that one can find at the health food store, for example. And it's a science and an art that was begun a little over 200 years ago by Samuel Hahnemann, who is a German doctor. And it was based and is based on the idea of like cures like. And so we use a very, very small dilution of the same substance which can cause a certain set of symptoms in a healthy person in somebody suffering from a set of symptoms. So, for example, if you think of honeybee, if you get stung by a bee, you have redness, swelling, itching, and pain. And if you dilute homeopathically that same preparation of honeybee, it's called Apis, then that can treat a variety of conditions that also have that swelling and itching. It can be a bee bite. It can be conjunctivitis. It can be an allergic reaction with a lot of swelling. It can be a bladder infection with a lot of swelling. So that's the idea. And I think today we're primarily talking about travel, homeopathy, acute first aid, but we specialize in treating patients with ADD, with bipolar disorder, with menopausal symptoms, you know, with very deep kinds of problems. So one is self-treatment, which is what we're focusing on today for acute or first aid conditions. The other is treatment by a homeopath for chronic long-standing problems.
One of the other interesting things about homeopathic remedies is they are produced from a variety of different sources. So you mentioned Apis, which is sort of an animal or insect source, but there are also minerals and metals and even poisons that are diluted to the point where if you took them to a lab, you wouldn't really find any of the substance there, but they work on this very subtle energetic level. And I have to say that my own experiences with homeopathic remedies are that when they work, they are absolutely magical, and that working on your own with them in acute situations can be remarkably useful and successful. You don't have to be afraid of doing them because it's rare to get yourself into trouble. And but we will, you know, talk some about what kinds of cautions to take when you're doing this.
Yeah, and it's, you know, our, for example, we have a book in a kit. Our book, our kit has 50 remedies, and a number of the kits have 30. But if you have 30 to 50 remedies in a kit, you can, it's amazing, you know, how much you can help yourself, your family. And I know when my patients, whether they're going to South America or whether they're going on a hiking trip or a kayaking trip, I know that if they have the book and kit, even if they don't treat themselves, which chances are they will, and especially if they're going out of the country, for example, I know they will come back and they will have helped other people. And, I mean, I hear this just over and over again.
It's also possible to find out which remedies to put into a first aid kit in a variety of books and stuff that are available from many different authors, including Judith Reichenberg-Ullman.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you can
sure.
You can put together your own kit over time, too, if you don't want to get a full one all at once.
Yeah, now, I mean, our main message is don't leave home without it.
That, right.
Because when you want it, you know, when you need it, that's when you want it.
Now, one of the things that makes traveling with homeopathy challenging is that they are extremely fragile remedies. Even though they are not very dangerous and very low dilution, et cetera, it's easy to destroy these remedies with too much heat, exposure to air, touching them.
You don't agree? I don't.
Oh, okay.
I don't. You know, in other words...
Everybody always warns you.
I know, and a lot of people say it, but I don't... Nowadays, it used to be that when we traveled, we would always put our kits around the x-ray machine. But we've gone to so many different places in a variety of temperatures, and we've had situations where we had to put them through x-rays, and so have people that have used the kits, no problem. And we actually keep a kit in each of our cars, you know, and it can get hot, and that's a glove compartment. So I do understand that, you know, that people say you need to be careful with your remedies. And I wouldn't put them probably right next to a microwave, although I don't know if it would make any difference. But in general, they're not really fragile.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the other issue, which is that, as I said, when you're working with acute remedies, when you're working with a situation that has come up and you just need to take care of things, to some extent you're talking about treating symptomatically, but you're also helping to unwind or repair the damage, like you said, with a bee sting or something.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're working this way, are there any possible ways to get in trouble? I mean, I've noted that people attempting to work on an acute level have sometimes managed to prove a remedy by taking it too often. So do you want to talk a little bit about dosing?
I mean, I think the main way to get into trouble is to, you know, to not get emergency care when you need it. Other than that, our book and other books, too, are going to have guidelines about how to take the remedies. And even though with homeopathy, less is better, and it's about the least harmful medicine you're ever going to find, it's true that you shouldn't be taking it over and over and over again. And with an acute situation, especially first aid, a lot of times you just need to take a remedy once, and that's it. So I think as long as you follow the guidelines, you're not going to get into trouble. Proving is when you take a homeopathic medicine over and over and over again, and then you begin to develop symptoms that are characteristic of that medicine that you didn't already have. But that only happens when people are overdoing it. So in general, it's very, very safe, effective, natural, and in general, just follow the guidelines that you find in a book and you'll be fine.
Okay, so in addition to that, do you want to talk a little bit about the different types of potencies there are and how they work? For instance, you know, very low, I've heard, you know, from other homeopaths that very, very low dilutions like 6X or something are going to give you more direct help with physical symptoms and that some of the
No, you don't agree with that.
No, I don't.
I think in general, I mean, one rule of thumb is probably the very low potencies you're going to have to take more often. And the very high potencies, you know, like a 1M potency, you may need to just take one time. But I think, in general, I think it kind of complicates it, I think, to talk about potency. So don't even worry about it. You know, get a good book, get the remedies, either have a kit or, you know, get a remedy that you can buy locally, and then just, you know, follow the guidelines that are recommended in the book. Because what we most want people to do is have success with homeopathy.
Okay, so you don't want to talk either about the difference between taking pellets, pills, or liquids.
I don't think it's necessary. In other words, most, for the sake of homeopathy, for first aid and acute, you're probably going to be taking pellets because that's what the kits contain. The kits contain pellets. And there will be guidelines. I know our kit says this is how you take them, and our book says, depending on the potency, this is how often you take it. So basically, I think it's very simple.
Okay, well, I'm going to make some comments, if I might, because I also use homeopathy. One of the things I would like to say is that in my experience, some people are rather sensitive to lactose, and homeopathic remedies are generally made with lactose. So people who are sensitive to lactose, who know that they have an allergy to milk or sensitivity, might want to stick to the pellets because the pellets have the remedy sort of coating the pellet. So what you can do is put the pellet in your mouth under your tongue, count to about 10, and then spit it out. If you use a pill, it'll immediately dissolve and you'll have some of the lactose. Also, I've noticed that some people respond better occasionally to very low diluted combo remedies that come in liquids that some companies are making. BioAllers makes them. Various other companies are making combo remedies. And sometimes it's possible to just kind of dash into a store that has a mixed remedy and find something that will give you some relief because you'll probably respond to at least one of the remedies that's in there. So that's another thing. And some people also do better with the liquids because of the whole issue with the lactose. That's just been my own experience.
I think one of the things that people really like about our book, we wrote our book so that parents who have a screaming child with an ear infection at 3 in the morning could be able to have success. And so in our book, it's filled with icons, it's filled with bold phrases, and it's filled with look, listen, and ask. So what we're trying to do is to make it easy for people. And so I think that, and so in this kind of situation, if the remedy fits, it's very easy to tell from reading that what fits and what doesn't fit. And so then you're likely to get more success from a single-dose remedy. I certainly hear what you're saying, that in a pinch, you know, a combination remedy can help if the right homeopathic remedy happens to be in it.
Well, the mission of this radio show is to give people as much information as we can without relying on them to buy a book, because there are people listening to the show who can't afford to buy books or who may not have access to a book or may have an acute situation arise before they get a book. So although I think your book does a nice job, again, this is Judith Reichenberg-Ullman that I'm speaking to today on Your Own Health and Fitness. One of her books is Homeopathic Self-Care, that she's written with her husband, Robert Ullman. This is distinct from Dana Ullman, who also does a lot of writing and has a lot of books. It's a very nice book, very easy to use. But for the purpose of the show, what we really wanted to do was give people some, if you would, free information, because that's sort of what we do on Free Speech Radio here.
And you can go online. In other words, you could just go online in general and find information as well about acute homeopathic remedies.
Indeed they can, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to, the other thing that I discovered is that it's possible when you're traveling to actually out of the country to also find homeopathic pharmacies who will make stuff up for you. It's really interesting that most of the rest of the world, you can find these. I found a homeopathic pharmacy in Kauai, in Hawaii, in this little place. So that's another thing that's kind of fun, is if you're traveling outside of the United States, homeopathy is used a lot in other places. All right, so you wrote an article in the Townsend Letter that gave me the idea that we might want to talk about travel.
Mm-hmm.
Along with some basic flying instructions that I have, some basics, which is if you're in a plane, it's a good idea to move around the cabin about once an hour to avoid clotting. You're in a high altitude, and that increases the chances that your blood will get sticky. So if you get up and walk, even though this may disturb your people that are sitting with you, get up and walk every once in a while, about once an hour. The other thing you can do is the planes, especially now with the economy the way it is, try to conserve money by not releasing air packs, is what they're called, not releasing fresh air into the area where the passengers are. The pilots, on the other hand, have air packs released in their compartment all the time because their heads have to stay clear. The rest of the plane is breathing recirculated air, and they will not open an air pack unless somebody says, I don't feel well, I'm getting dizzy, I feel like there's no air, please open an air pack, and then they're required to do that. You can't do it very often, but if you really feel unwell, you can ask them to do that, particularly if you're stuck on the plane on the ground and it's just recirculating the air. The other trick is to sit close to the pilot, so even the very first row, the sort of bulkhead or something that may be less comfortable in terms of legroom, the closer you are to the pilots, the better your air will be. I note, Judith, that you have some suggestions for fear flying.
Well, I want to mention one other thing.
Oh, okay.
I want to mention directly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, we do. We live part-time in Chile in South America, and we've traveled all over. So we have lots and lots of experience with long-distance flights. And actually, 2 years ago, my husband got pneumonia after an international and then a local flight. And so what we've done ever since then is we have those little ion generators that we wear around our necks and that are battery-operated. And they really purify the air right around you. And we haven't gotten sick once on a plane since we got one of those.
Yeah, the only caution I would raise about those is they may have improved the technology, but when I tried one of them, the amount of ozone that was being released around me was so strong that the ozone made me feel sick. And people who have respiratory symptoms particularly will react poorly to ozone because it's a highly reactive oxygen species, so it's inflammatory. But it may be that some of these new ones are kind of better. But if you smell a kind of burnt metal smell around you and you start feeling poorly, you might want to turn it off because while it's working, it's creating a lot of ozone, these ionizers. So
yeah,
you have
no,
to
we've
careful.
Never smelled that. And,
that's good.
We got it maybe, I would say, 2 years ago.
Uh-huh. So maybe they've improved them.
Uh-huh.
The other thing that's useful to do with the problem with bugs on the airplane is to drip some essential oils into your nostrils, to use oils in your nostrils so that your sinuses don't get dried out, because that's how bugs get in, is when the tissues get dried out. That's why when it's not raining during dry parts of the year, people are more susceptible to getting sick. And then also hydrate yourself and maybe have a damp handkerchief with some essential oils on it to breathe through. And remember to drink as much water, not tea, and certainly not alcohol, because those will dehydrate you.
I mean, in general, from an Ayurvedic point of view, air travel is what's called vata, V-A-T-A, aggravating. And what that means is it tends to dry people out, and symptoms include dry skin, nervousness, insomnia, constipation, everything associated with dryness. And so typically Ayurveda would recommend drinking a lot, and I think water really is the best, and not carbonated beverages, and oil. I mean, we don't use essential oils so much because of homeopathy, but oils for sure, definitely, and whether it's almond oil or, you know, ingesting and also on your body can be really helpful to keep you, to counteract those effects of the air travel.
So it sounds like you are worried about anecdoting the remedies using essential oils then.
Using some essential oils for sure.
Which ones are you worried about?
Particularly eucalyptus, camphor, and menthol.
Okay. So the other ones like lavender and things like that are calming would be okay.
It depends on the person. You know, some people are quite sensitive to really strong oils like lavender. I don't know your experience, but it's very common now when you go to a retreat. We just went to a retreat. When you go to a retreat or a camp or whatever, my health club, for example, says don't please avoid essential oils because people are really sensitive to them. So it just depends on the situation.
Well, I we're not talking about opening an entire bottle of essential oils and just shaking them around the place. We're talking about putting one or two drops on a handkerchief.
Yeah.
And real essential oils, the smell should dissipate within less than an hour. So if it's not doing that, it's not a real essential oil. It's a synthetic that's masquerading as, you know, it's being called an essential oil when it's actually synthetic, which is happening a lot. So you had some interesting suggestions about fear flying, although, gosh, there really are some scary reasons to be on a plane. But even aside from that, some people just have a kind of phobia about flying, and you had some interesting suggestions for which homeopathic remedies help with that problem.
Yeah, there's two that are really the most common. One that's really the most common is called aconite, and aconitum napellum, which is monk's hood. And it's the most as far as generic, as far as fear of flying. And so, you know, that will help many people. And then there's a second one, less common, but still common, called argentum nitricum, if the aconite doesn't work. And so, but the aconite is definitely the most common.
So aconite is spelled aconite, and which dose would you suggest starting with?
I think most kits, the absolute most common is a 30C. So again, it, depending on what's available, any potency can be used, but 30C is the most common, and that would be fine to take.
And argentum is A-R-G-E-N-T-U-M, argentum, and then you can just say nigrentum, N-I-T, actually, will get you there. But argentum is silver, isn't it?
It is. It's silver nitrate. Yeah, argentum is silver.
Okay.
But aconite is like, you know, for 9 out of 10 people, aconite is going to be what's really helpful.
So what would make it turn to an argentum?
Argentum nitricum, people who need that remedy, have a lot of time concerns. So they're going to be very anxiously looking at their watch. They're going to be worried about arriving on time. And they have a more global, it's not just a fear in the plane, but they're likely to be afraid of bridges, afraid of elevators, a more global kind of claustrophobia.
So in fact, both of these remedies work very nicely for people in fear situations aside from travel. Aconite also, in my experience, is very good when people are starting to get sick and they don't know they're getting sick and they have an anxiety reaction, they feel afraid. Aconite is a good remedy. Argentum, you know, that's really interesting because I think when people are traveling and busy and things like that, they flip into that state that you're describing for the argentum, you know, that sort of, oh my goodness, what time is it? What am I doing? You know, yada, yada. So either one of those sound interesting for other fear situations. So those are your two favorite ones for flight, fear flying.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. We're very close to needing to take a break. I think I will do that again and remind people that you are listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone with Judith Reichenberg-Ullman. She is author with her husband, Robert Ullman, of Homeopathic Self-Care, and we are discussing homeopathy and travel. We're going to take a very brief musical break. I'm Lena Berman, and if you will stay with us, we'll return in a moment.
Oh, what little moonlight can do. Oh, what little moonlight can do to you. You're in love, your hearts are fluttering all day long. You only stutter cause your poor tongue just will not utter the words I love you. Wait a while till little moonbeam comes peeping through, you'll get bold. You can't resist him, and all you'll say when you have kissed him is, ooh, what a little moonlight can do.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman. Just to remind you, there's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, information on CD copies and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772, and there's also information at sustainablehealthinstitute.org. If you'd like to get online to look at Judith Reichenberg-Ullman's work, you can either go to healthyhomeopathy.com. That's healthy, H-O-M-E-O-P-A-T-H-Y. Or you can go to drreichenberg@gmail.com to email her directly. That's drreichenberg@gmail.com. So we're talking about homeopathy and travel. We've just talked about when people get frightened in planes or any other. To me, the next sort of intuitive place to go is to motion sickness, which can happen not only on planes, but in cars and trains and other things, boats.
Yeah, that's a really important one.
You want to talk about which remedies you like for that?
Sure, sure. It's a very personal one for me, too, because I get seasick and I'm a kayaker. And so, yeah. So there's three homeopathic remedies that are really the best for motion sickness. And the one that's most, for most extreme situations, and this is the one that helps me the most, is called tobaccum. And it's made from tobacco. And it's just the kind of seasickness or motion sickness where you're just green and you feel horrible, really nauseated, and you just want to die. So that's tobaccum.
And it's spelled like tobacco.
T-A-B-A-C-U-M. And the second is called cocculus. I would say it's the second most common, and that's C-O-C-C-U-L-U-S. And it's for the kind of motion sickness in particular where somebody gets sick from watching objects move across their visual field when they're in motion. And they feel better when their eyes are closed, whereas with tobacco, it's not going to make really that much of a difference. It may make some difference. But and then the third one is petroleum, which is just like it sounds like. And I would say if the other two don't work, or if, say, you get motion sick and you just happen to be right near a boat motor, for example, then I would think of petroleum. And it has quite a sense of disorientation and confusion. So those are the three that I would say. And, you know, I might say also, since we're talking about things you can get online, when I was in New Zealand with my husband several times, we went to a place called Paihia. And in Paihia, there is the Paihia Pharmacy, and people buy the Paihia Bomb, is what it's called, through the Internet or by phone from the Paihia Pharmacy from all over the world. And I still keep a supply of Paihia Bomb. And it's two pills that you take. One's an antihistamine, and then the other is a caffeine pill. So that's a little aside.
And this is for what?
For motion sickness.
Oh, for motion sickness. Well, that makes a certain kind of sense because motion sickness, we learned when we did a show about balance, takes place in your vestibular apparatus. It's actually happening in your inner ear. It feels like it's happening in your stomach, but it's not. And there are other things that help with that. Now, there are other remedies that are not homeopathic that are supposed to help with nausea. I would imagine that you don't want to combine these because it's a strong flavor. One is ginger, just ginger root.
It doesn't really matter if you combine them. I mean, I can just say from my own experience, we went to a homeopathic seminar in Hawaii, and we went on a dolphin watch. I think it was dolphin or whale. I can't remember which. Off Molokai, and nobody had remedies, and there was ginger. I mean, I took ginger ale. But and no, it's no problem combining that with homeopathy. But boy, I wish I had my tobacco with me. I still was really sick.
Yeah, one of the problems with motion sickness is that your alternatives are very small, because if you don't use a homeopathic remedy, this is one instance where remedies are really amazing, because you can have a vestibular apparatus dysfunction thing. You can have a disorder in there that can be flipped by, can be precipitated by taking a drug, can be a drug reaction. There's a number of reasons why this can happen, including having an inner ear sort of infection, which is why a decongestant in Western medicine would be applied. You know, that would be the reason for that combination of caffeine and a decongestant, although I wouldn't recommend that for a lot of people. But the point is that it's very difficult to get over these things, and all that Western medicine has is decongestants or other things which may cause other problems. So homeopathic remedies for this particular issue of motion sickness and vestibular disorders is really remarkable. Another one that I discovered when someone actually has an inner ear infection that won't go away and it's persisting is Kali Miroticum. Works very nicely for that. I discovered this when I had this happen from swimming. You know, I had one of these inner ear things, and I was just, the world was whirling around me, and I took the Kali Mir, and it just stopped it almost immediately. So it's very magical when it works.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, I want to talk a bit about when you get somewhere new, you know, this whole issue of acclimating to time zones. One of the recommendations that I think works is to get out and walk around in the daylight when you arrive, if it's daylight when you arrive. Some people say best to just go to bed close to your own time, but the main thing that I've heard is just getting sunlight during the day in the new time zone. Melatonin gets studied a lot for use with jet lag, melatonin the hormone. The only caution I would give about melatonin is that people who are naturally very high in melatonin, if they take it, will get a little manic, so they'll feel very buzzy. So always start with the smallest dose to see if it's something that you actually need. But it's been studied a lot for use with jet lag and getting your circadian rhythms readjusted.
And one thing that you can find just about anywhere now, which was developed in New Zealand, is a homeopathic combination remedy called No Jet Lag. And it's available in the travel stores, and I think in lots of other stores as well. And we use that, and it's quite effective, quite helpful. And I am a proponent of, you know, drinking lots, as I mentioned, on planes, lots of water, and of acclimating as quickly as possible to the local time zone. And so if we go someplace that's, let's say 8 hours difference, or when we go to India or New Zealand, I mean, it can be 14 to 17 hours difference. And so I think taking a short nap, but then trying to as quickly as possible get in the local time zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that the sun exposure helps with that, getting out in the sun. For trouble sleeping, there's a variety of things that I've found that work well, along with specific homeopathic remedies that would go with your particular terrain, you know, what's going on with you. But this is a situation where the Bach flower remedies work, and even though these are flower essences which are supposed to be produced in a non-homeopathic way, the Bach flower essences actually are produced in a homeopathic method. And I found that the Bach rescue remedy sleep actually works pretty well. You spray it on your tongue. And here we also encounter the amino acid, not the homeopathic remedy, the amino acid GABA, G-A-B-A. Don't take this and get behind the wheel of a car immediately, but if you take 500 to 1,000 milligrams of GABA right before bed on an empty stomach, it can help to sort of calm you down and help you sleep. Do you want to give us some helpful homeopathics for sleep and fatigue while traveling?
Sure. And I hadn't thought of rescue remedy for sleep, but rescue remedy is good for just all kinds of things.
Well, this is a special one that they've produced called Rescue Remedy Sleep, which is different than the other rescue remedy.
Huh.
Although rescue remedy is good for all sorts of strange circumstances.
Yeah, and there's also a rescue remedy cream, which a lot of people like for a variety of different things. I would say the most common homeopathic remedy for, there's three for sleeplessness. One is coffea, which is made from homeopathic preparation of coffee, and it's the kind of like an overexcitement, a sleeplessness from overexcitement. Often people wake up at 3 in the morning and they're wide awake and they're emotional and they're excited. So that's one of them.
And it's spelled like coffee.
Right, C-O-F-F-E-A. And a second, Nux Vomica, which is Quaker's Buttons, and that's N-U-X, V-O-M-I-C-A, is good for the kind of sleeplessness which is due to thinking too much about business, worrying about the stress of business.
Or eating or drinking too much alcohol.
Yes, mm-hmm. can be.
Mm-hmm.
And then Arsenicum Album, A-R-S-E-N-I-C-U-M-A-L-B-U-M, it's a remedy more for sleeplessness due to anxiety, and it can be anxiety due to financial concerns. But just it's they have a fear of dying. They're really anxious and nervous, and they may have diarrhea, maybe an insomnia during a stomach flu, for example. I would say those three are the most common.
I think of cold, too, maybe cold hands, cold feet,
they're very chilly. So is Nux Vomica, though. Both of those are quite chilly.
The other thing that's nice about Arsenicum Album, Alba, is that it seems somewhat useful, I think, also for just the kind of chemical exposures that you get when you're in travel situations, you know, like either on the plane. I mean, there's that issue of just how do you, and you might want to suggest some remedies for this, how do you help with detoxification and clearing these chemicals, you know, the perfumes that get recirculated under your nose, aside from having an air purifier, or the chemical toilets in the buses, or the cigarette smoke in foreign countries, or the petrol in these boats, or something like that. Do you have some favorite remedies for helping the liver do its job of clearing things out?
I would say not really. One thing I want to say about the Arsenicum Album, that's one probably more than others that I would be very cautious about taking too much.
Oh, yeah.
And if you start getting more nervous
and colder and more diarrhea.
And pacing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the best thing as far as clearing, because that gets into, I think, more often constitutional prescribing when people have multiple chemical sensitivities. But I think the idea of just breathing as much fresh air as possible, getting out and exercising as soon as you...
Absolutely.
Either in the plane or... and drinking lots and lots of water. So mm-hmm. I think really those are the best things that I would recommend. And again, the air purifier, which I like.
The other thing that people can do in those situations is to make sure that you are taking vitamin C throughout the day, since vitamin C gets used up very quickly in stressful situations. So you can burn up a lot of vitamin C while you're traveling or exposed to pollutants. And people who are not chemically sensitive still get headaches and nausea from chemical exposures. So vitamin C certainly, and then I always suggest that people, in addition, take some kind of good multivitamin, you know, if you can find one that you can carry on the plane without them taking it away from you, that is hypoallergenic. I have noticed that the company BioAllers has a variety of different types of mixed remedies that work very well. In fact, they have a very good insomnia remedy that works quite well. There's also, I think, for chemical exposure and petro and things like that, I've noticed that people often get rid of the headache and the sort of bad feeling if they take some histamine, homeopathic histamine, histaminium, seems to help clear some of that a little bit. So let's...
I mean, the other thing I want to add, too, now we pretty much have to travel with food, you know, because it isn't provided.
But, true enough.
But I think it's really, really important to take provisions, to take really healthy, organic food that you can eat on the plane, and, you know, organic fruit or munching on carrots or
nuts,
whatever it is. But really, you know, don't hesitate. Be sure to take enough food for yourself, because they can have long flights now where you don't get food or you don't get decent food. So it's really important.
Well, that does lead me into my next topic, which is food issues. Let me just quickly ID the show. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman on the phone with Judith Reichenberg-Ullman, co-author of Homeopathic Self-Care. We're discussing homeopathy and travel.
One other thing I wanted to mention quickly, too, is just yoga stretching, because there's, and even some of the airlines have little videos that take you through that. But that can be wonderful. There's so many yoga postures that you can do, even in your seat or, you know, getting up and walking around.
Yeah, actually, even if somebody's elderly in there or use a wheelchair or something, the other thing you can do is just do isometrics where you clench and release your muscles, because really all you're trying to do is keep the blood flowing. And this is quite important. It also oxygenates your blood and helps clear your head. But, you know, I think everybody's had that experience when the air starts to get really stale in an airplane. You're reading a book, and you read a sentence, and then you read it again and again and again. And that's how you know that there's no air. Your brain's not working.
I mean, there's a couple of places in the world. I know it's true of India, and I can't remember if it's true of New Zealand, but in India for sure, they actually spray
pesticides.
They spray pesticides upon arrival, and we went to India many, many times, and that was difficult for me, and I used to cover my face with whatever I could, a pillow or whatever, but that's the worst.
Yeah, it's all over your clothes, though, and on your shoes. Yeah, I think it's a good idea to call ahead and find out whether they're going to do that. Because for people who are sent, well, for anybody, it's pretty nasty.
When you land in India, you can just figure they're going to do that.
Okay, so India would be one to be worried about. But I almost wonder whether people should bring like a huge plastic bag or something, cut a hole out of it, put a shower cap on their head or something. I don't know. You know,
yeah.
If you really want to do that trip, you may want to protect your clothing from the spray, because it's really going to be all over the place.
I never found it. I mean, I have to say, I never found it to be as much of a problem as I thought, but just the idea of it was really appalling to me.
Well, we've covered the substances that are being used for insecticides in these situations. We know what kind of chemistry they are, and I would highly recommend that people not expose themselves to them, even a little bit, whether they think they're reacting to them or not. I see an awful lot of people in my practice with Parkinson's and other kinds of, you know, autoimmune things and multiple sclerosis that have been triggered by exposure to pesticides. And sometimes it's one exposure that trips them off. So always better to be safe when you can. So food issues. People tend to get constipated during travel. Another thing along with vitamin C that helps with constipation is a little extra magnesium at night before you go to bed, which is also very relaxing and will help you sleep. So an extra 400 milligrams of magnesium would help with that, and the water and the walking. But sometimes it's possible to just get sick because you're drinking different water, you're exposed to different pathogens, and you get turista or, God forbid, food poisoning. You want to discuss some remedies for those?
Yeah, the best one, homeopathy is fantastic for acute diarrhea. And I would say the number one remedy, which is most common, is called podophyllum, P-O-D-O-P-H-Y-L-L-U-M. And I can't tell you how often I've had patients take this along, and they found it to be really helpful. It's for the kind of turista, that's where there's an explosive diarrhea. It may wake you up at 4 or 5 in the morning, and the diarrhea literally is shooting all over the toilet, and there's cramps, and there's fatigue, and there's gas, and weakness, and rumbling and gurgling, and podophyllum is absolutely fantastic.
I think most people who are listening have been there, so we know what that's like.
Yeah,
is that also? It's also probably good for food poisoning as well. I mean, that's kind of what we're saying. Teresa,
well, with those symptoms that
yeah,
we're talking about,
exactly.
Food poisoning, some of them, slightly different remedies are needed. But I would say if they only remember podophyllum, you know, I would say that would be really often really helpful.
So probably a good way to remember it is it's podophyllin, so it's P-O-D-O and then P-H-Y-L-L-U-M, podophyllin. If you just remember podophyll, you'll get there, I think.
Right.
And then I see that you have cholecystis down.
I don't see that often.
Okay.
So I think if they just remember podophyllum, that, you know, and there are other things, I mean, if you're in a situation where you can get some kind of yogurt, that's often really helpful. I would do that like first thing.
Or sauerkraut, because some people are allergic to milk. So.
Yeah. I mean, in India, for example, or in many countries, it's really easy to to find something like the yogurt locally, whereas you're not going to find the acidophilus. And then psyllium seed, which is very available in India, I found that to be helpful as well.
Problem with psyllium seed is that, unfortunately, it is only grown in India right now. We don't have an organic psyllium seed source anywhere, and psyllium seed is one of the most highly sprayed products available, so I don't recommend psyllium seed to people. Flax seed can be purchased organically, and if you're traveling, you have to keep it cool. You might want to keep it in the seed, and then if you have to, just crush it physically with something hard if you don't have a coffee grinder or something, and use the flaxseed meal, which will work similarly to psyllium. I don't like psyllium just because of the spray. You know, it's so spray.
I think in a pinch, you know, if somebody...
You do what you have to do, yeah.
Yeah, if you're having really bad diarrhea, you know, yeah.
Well, sometimes you can also resort to bismuth, which you can get in Pepto-Bismol or in Kaopectate, which has now got bismuth. And bismuth is a heavy metal, and you don't want to do this very often or for a long period of time, for days and days. But it is remarkable for food poisoning reactions and calming vomiting and things like that. It works very, very well, even though Kaopectate doesn't have that obnoxious red coloring in it. But they both work in a pinch, just not to be taken for more than a few times. Here again, you mention arsenicum for foods. And here in the article, at least, you're suggesting that it's really good for food poisoning, specifically when you have nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea.
Yeah, it's more, not when there's an explosive kind of a stool, but especially when somebody's chilly and they're vomiting and they have diarrhea at the same time. That can be really helpful. And veratrum album, which is white hellebore, can also be helpful for that situation of vomiting and diarrhea. And it's actually historically, homeopathically, it's a big cholera remedy. So
that's veratrum?
Veratrum album.
V-E-R-A-T-R-U-M. Yeah, I always think of it as being sort of arsenicum album on steroids. You know, it's very strong. It's stronger, I think, for it's even more cold than arsenicum. And then you have gelesium, which I usually think of.
Gelsenium.
I'm saying it wrong. Okay, say it again.
Gelsenium.
Gelsenium, I'm saying it wrong. G-E-L-S-E-M-I-U-M.
But not for food poisoning.
Oh, you have it down for foods you wish you hadn't eaten.
Yeah, it's I wouldn't. It's not one of the more common ones. So
yeah,
I
I'm just using your article as a guide here.
Yeah, I would think of that more for a flu. The keys to gelsemium are dizzy, drowsy, droopy, and dull. So it's a great, great travel homeopathic remedy, but for that kind of situation where somebody has a flu where they're just exhausted. And in that kind of situation, you can take gelsemium at night and you can wake up in the morning and feel fine. I had a patient who last year, she was going to Europe with her kids and she felt horrible and she was in a gelsemium state and she was about to cancel her trip and I said, no. And she took it and she was fine the next morning and went on her trip and turned out great.
So before we totally run out of time, injuries and accidents, I think most people know to use arnica at this point, but there are a few other things like what happens if you get a puncture wound. So
yeah, and then I was just at a retreat, as I mentioned last week, and needed to give something for this. There are two remedies for puncture wounds. One is ledum, L-E-D-U-M, and I would say, and this can be for puncture wounds, even, you know, from puncture wounds or if you smash your finger.
Or insect bites.
Ledum is also really good for mosquito bites, insect bites, where there's not swelling. You would use Apis if there were swelling. And the other for the puncture wounds is Hypericum, H-Y-P-E-R. And that's more if there is radiating pain, like a nerve pain. But either Hypericum or Ledum are great, is great for puncture wounds.
Hypericum, again, H-Y-P-E-R-I-C-U-M. Apis for bee stings and some kind of things. Ross Tox is good for stiff overexertion, strain, you know, feeling better when you move. So, and let's end with maybe too much sun. I just want to remind people that adding just ascorbic acid, vitamin C to water and splashing it on your face fresh, mix it fresh each time. Just don't mix it up ahead of time. But water and vitamin C directly on your skin is a very non-toxic way to protect your skin from the sun. Some homeopathics for too much sun?
There's two main ones, belladonna and guanoin. Guanoin is actually nitroglycerin, and that's G-L-O-N-O-I-N-E. But a lot of kids are not going to have guanoin or guanoin, so belladonna is the first that I would think of. And one time I went backpacking and started in the heat of the day and really got overheated and sick to my stomach right away, but I had to hike, and I took belladonna, and it helped almost immediately.
Yeah, belladonna for really red-faced people is good. The other thing that can happen traveling in hot and humid or tropical places is sometimes women will get bladder infections from sitting in hot situations. They'll get an infection on a trip. And I'm here to tell you that if you're in a foreign country and you get a bladder infection, it's very unpleasant because it's very hard to find a doctor who will give you something that you want to take. So actually, do you want to cover bladder infections a bit? Because that's another travel problem.
Yeah, sure. The one of the most common ones is for a really bad bladder infection that comes on really suddenly with terrible pain and bleeding, I would say cantharis.
That's what I was thinking.
There's three of them. The second is staphysagria, S-A-S-T-A-P-H-Y-S-A-G-R-I-A, often associated with sexual activity, but very common. And the most common for women, I would say, is... And that's particularly for a bladder infection where there's pain in the urethra where the urine comes of urination. So those are the three most
give
common.
Give us the last one again. We're having a little problem with our connection. Give us the last.
Sarsaparilla is really good.
Spelled like it sounds, far, F-A-R?
S-A-R-S-A, Sarsaparilla, S-A-P-A-R-I.
Okay. So we've just gone over a whole lot of different remedies that can help with travel. Some of these are covered in an article in the Townsend Letter. It is issue July 08. There is an article by Judith Reichenberg Ullman and her husband about traveling with homeopathy. If people want to get in touch with the Townsend Letter, which is townsendletteroneword.com. There is also the book Homeopathic Self-Care by both Robert Ullman, MD, and Judith Reichenberg Ullman. And if you want to reach them directly, you can go to their website at healthyhomeopathy.com. I want to really thank you for taking the time to be on with us and being so disclosive about all these wonderful remedies.
Thank you very much. I just want people to use these and to be helped.
Yeah, and not to be afraid of them, and also to remember that they're very small and easy to carry, and they can be extraordinarily powerful.
Definitely.
So I'm glad that you're telling people not to be so worried about anecdoting and whatnot. So thank you very much, Judith Reichenberg Ullman. And I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about your own health and fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, how to get CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772. And there's also information at sustainablehealthinstitute.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom. ¶¶